Well, Len, it is U.S. Open week. Always a great week for golf. And I think for people who are watching the Open, it's a great way to get excited about golf for the year if the Masters didn't do it back in the spring.
Gets people to pick up the clubs if they haven't done so far and get them out to the golf course.
U.S. Open, like the Masters, but it makes me nostalgic. My first U.S. Open was, I think, my best one. It was in 1973 at Oakmont when a young guy that nobody heard of named Johnny Miller, skinny guy from California, got hot, and he shot 63 in the final round and spoiled all the fun for Arnold Palmer in Arnold Palmer's backyard there. He was from Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and Johnny Miller won the title, and it was, it started off a great career for Johnny, but it was a heck of a news story at the time when this young kid got red hot. And I believe I've covered 23 U.S. Opens total, and could check that number. But anyway, I don't remember anyone that sticks out in my mind as vividly as that one did.
My question this week, and I know that the USGA can run into difficulties from conversations I've had with outgoing CEO Mike Davis, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of taking the U.S. Open to courses that have regular PGA Tour stops with them on the calendar that year. And I think... And don't get me wrong, Pebble Beach, Torrey Pines, they've got the ocean alongside the golf course. And of course, there are some people out there who always debate, would these really be good golf courses if they weren't next to the ocean? And I don't know. I think I would like to see the U.S. Open go to something that wasn't a tour stop 3 months or 4 months earlier. But Mike Davis always claims that the quality of the weather allows them to do different things with the golf courses by June that the PGA Tour can't do at Pebble Beach and Torrey Pines in February.
I've always been opposed to this practice of having a U.S. Open at courses that host tour events. I don't see the point of it. The U.S. Open should be a special event. It is a special event no matter where they play it, but there's no need to have it at Torrey Pines or Pebble Beach for that matter. There's plenty of other places in California, Olympic Club being the most prominent in my mind at the moment, to do it. So I think that it's a bad idea that they do this. I guess the mindset, at least with the previous administration, is to keep those tournaments in the rotation. It'll be interesting, though, to see what Mike Wann does when he starts putting his influence on the USGA into practice.
I think the Olympic Club is the one real legit U.S. Open course on the West Coast. And if the USGA is going to take the U.S. Open to Pebble Beach or Torrey Pines, you would think that the PGA Tour would not have a tournament at those courses on that given year and then go back the following year after the U.S. Open is over. I don't know, just my thought. I always think the USGA can do better than pick up regular tour stops when they're picking U.S. Open sites. And I know they ended up having some difficulties when they were at Congressional, I believe 9 years ago. And, you know, the Tiger Woods tournament had been there at the time. And so I guess I just would like to see the U.S. Open be at, who knows, maybe a U.S. Open course. And there's enough courses in California where they could hold both events in the same year, but at different places. So,
well, Pebble Beach, you know, is really, it doesn't need to be in the U.S. Open rotation. It's thought of, I think, the history of golf as a PGA Tour stop, as a site of the pro-ams that Bing Crosby used to put on. And what their tournament still is now is the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. You know, it really belongs as a PGA Tour event. I don't see what gains by having the U.S. Open there for that course's reputation or for the USGA's reputation. So that'd be my thought there. At least get Pebble off the calendar. I think Olympic Club, I agree with you completely. Olympic Club is the course in California that really is the best site for a U.S. Open.
A lot of debate happening at another great Bay Area golf course, And that's Lake Merced that just hosted the LPGA event last week. And the players are raving about the golf course. It's a fantastic golf course. I played there years ago. But now Gil Hanse is coming in to take this old classic and redo it. And apparently the golf course is really getting blown up, and a lot of people are questioning why. So I'm not sure what he's going to do. I don't know what his master plan is for changing that golf course, but it seems like they are blowing up a golf course there in California that would make for either a great tour stop or even U.S. Open-style golf course for a championship like that. But we'll have to see what they do with it when Gil Hanse gets done.
Yeah, Gil Hanse, he puts his name on it. You must know something good is coming up. Something big is probably targeted for that venue. But I don't know Lake Merced. I must say, I'm sure it's a fine course, and I know that they got well received earlier this year. But you know, Gil Hanse is the hot architect right now, probably the hottest of all the architects right now. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes with that one.
Getting back to the U.S. Open, there was some interesting press conferences yesterday. And apparently after the Brooks Koepka press conference, the Golf Channel threw it back to the talking heads, so to speak, and they said there wasn't one good question asked in the press conference. And what was amazing, and I don't know if it was one writer or multiple writers, must have had to work on some sort of historical feature, because all they wanted to do was talk about the 2008 U.S. Open that Tiger won 13 years ago. And, you know, it was interesting, some of the answers that players like Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth were giving. They're saying, hey, I was in grade school. I didn't even see the tournament. So there wasn't much to add. I know that, I guess Koepka said, he goes, I'm probably more qualified to talk about Tiger's win at the Masters 2 years ago because I was there and not far away from him when he was playing on Sunday. But, you know, in all honesty, and Len, you've been through some of these press conferences like I have at major championships and U.S. Opens, and there's always people that you wonder how they got in the press tent to begin with. And in all honesty, if you're going to the press conferences yesterday at the U.S. Open and you don't have anything to add to the press conference or ask the players outside of the so-called Brooks Koepka Bryson DeChambeau feud, or want to bring up Tiger Woods from 13 years ago, you really shouldn't be in there asking questions.
Well, you're right about that. And the the DeChambeau Koepka thing is really kind of boring. Amuses me, but it bores me. I don't see it as I think it's just a case of two players trying to hype, have their own reasons for hyping things up. The main press conference in this one, pre-tournament press conference, is very clear. It was Phil Mickelson, and I did watch that one. I mean, he is going in now before a ball is hit. He is the story of this U.S. Open. I mean, he's going for the Grand Slam. He has a career Grand Slam, and he's doing it in his his home neck of the woods. It may well be the best chance he's still going to have. I mean, he's going to play, and because of his win at the PGA, very dramatic win there, he'll play in it for a few more years. But he needed a sponsor exemption to initially get into this U.S. Open. So I think it's a great story, no matter how it comes out. But going into this tournament, Mickelson is clearly the number one story.
There's a lot of people who are very curious to see what's going to happen with Jon Rahm after being, in essence, ejected out of the Memorial Tournament when he had a six-shot lead after three rounds because he had a positive COVID test. And there's some people who think that his fiery personality, he's going to come out on a mission to win a tournament after, I'm sure in some ways, he's kicking himself, but at the same time might feel like he had a tournament and almost $2 million stolen from him.
I don't see that end of it, but I did read an interesting thing today that I hadn't seen earlier. Rahm had said, and it was on a website story I wish I could quote just where it was at, but he said he had indeed been vaccinated, but it was very recently, and there had to be a waiting period for him after that. I didn't quite understand it. My understanding from the other preliminary reports was that he hadn't been vaccinated, but this story alluded to the fact that now he couldn't see his new baby for a while. He couldn't see his wife. He couldn't see his dad because his dad hadn't been vaccinated. I mean, it painted Rahm off in an unfortunate, sad light. And, you know, I can understand his having to being forced to withdraw from a tournament he clearly had control of. The thing of it is, if he had gone through the vaccination process as promptly as he should have, the subject wouldn't have even come up because he wouldn't have even needed to be tested.
Well, it's my understanding that he may have been between shots, so to speak. Maybe he had the first one, didn't have the second one yet. Yeah. So anyway, that's the situation that he ended up in, is unfortunately having to get pulled out of that tournament. Len, we have a tournament in town, actually, today. The Illinois State Women's Amateur taking place up at Pine Meadow, and there are some really good players that are still out there battling for the state women's amateur title.
The defending champion, Sarah Arnold, is of St. Charles, is in there, and I noticed that Megan Furtney, who qualified for the U.S. Women's Open last year and went on to play, begin a college career at Duke, I know she's in the field as well. So that may be one of, I know that the organizers of that event believe that this is one of the strongest fields that they've had in years. And I think it's just great that they bring that tournament to Chicago once in a while. It's usually, unlike a lot of the other big tournaments, it's usually held more in downstate rural communities because that's where the organizers live. But Pine Meadow has now hosted it a couple times in recent years. I think it's great that that this year it's over there. I hope a lot of people come out to see that one because we need to boost women's golf in Illinois.
Championship organizers spoke with me yesterday and said that they are having a little bit of a challenge getting some golf courses for that event, and they are hoping that going forward, both the Chicago District Golf Association, the CDGA, and perhaps even the Illinois PGA could help them land some facilities for their tournaments going forward the next couple of years. And they were very appreciative to the Jemsek family for stepping up and letting them have Pine Meadow for a few days to play the championship this year. So hopefully that organization will continue to move forward. There's also some thoughts whether they would sort of get under the umbrella of one of Illinois' golf organizations like the CDGA, like the Women's Western Golf Association did, sort of reestablishing themselves with the Western Golf Association and bringing the men and the women together under, shall we say, one umbrella.
Yeah, well, you know, the Illinois Women's Golf Association, the downstate group that puts on the Women's State Amateur, this tournament that's at Pine Meadow this week has been held for over 80 years. So, you know, it's a well-established tournament. I can't imagine why either the Illinois PGA or the Chicago District Golf Association wouldn't really want to be involved in the organization of that event, because it's clearly a fixture on the schedule for women, and it hasn't gotten, you know, because it's not part of one of the big groups, it's a group of volunteers putting it on every year, and they do a good job. You know, now it's time for one of those to step up, and it'll boost both the club and help the organization too, I think.
Len, we had a tournament here last week. It was great golf, as a matter of fact. I saw some of it, but I was one of the few people who saw part of it. The Arnold Palmer Cup was in town at Rich Harvest Farms, and exciting action. Last year, the international team really beat the Team USA pretty good, and this year, Team USA came back and beat the international team by a 6-point margin, and quite an exciting day of golf, 3 days of golf, actually, out at Rich Harvest Farms. It's just too bad that there was hardly anybody out there to see it because of advanced concerned issues about COVID.
Yeah, that was really a shame. This would have been a good spectator attraction. It was in its previous play at Rich Harvest, but when it was an all-male event. But the unfortunate part of it, beyond the fact that not enough people were there to see it, was that our two local players in the field, the University of Illinois golfer Adrian Dumont de Chassard and Northwestern Irene Kim, they didn't come up very good on the final day of the tournament, and they got beaten in their singles matches. But otherwise, I mean, you know, you like to see your local players do well, and they did okay in their previous matches before that. But yeah, that's a good tournament, the Arnold Palmer Cup. I hope Jerry Rich is going to do it again. I understand he's willing. It's a special event in amateur golf in that it may be the only one, I think. I can't think of another that has the men and the women, top amateur collegiate players, playing together. And well worth watching.
Well, the next available option to come back to Rich Harvest Farms would be in 2026, and it would be a fantastic year to bring them here because you would have all the top amateur players from around the world here in June. And then 4 months later at Medina, we'd have many of the top professional players here for the President's Cup. So 2026 possibly could be setting up for a great year of golf in the Chicago area. Well, Len, another thing about the U.S. Open, it usually concludes on Father's Day Sunday. And I know that that's another angle that always gets worked into the television broadcast. But another thing is, too, it's a great day, a great weekend, a great time to get things for Dad. And I don't know, Len, you've probably been following some of the different golf products that are out there, but whether it's golf, whether it's lessons, whether it's products, could be a great opportunity to buy something golf-related for Dad.
Products are fine, and, you know, there's a lot on the market now, all kinds of unique presents, and if you're just looking for a present and don't have an idea, buy a dozen golf balls. They're always appreciated. But you know what the best present is? My sister and her family, they have three boys. And the boys got together on Father's Day and arranged a foursome for the dad and the three of them. I thought that was the real way to spend a Father's Day, making it a really a special family affair. And then a meal with the rest of the family after it was over. It's really a big day, especially if you've got a big family. But playing golf on Father's Day in June, that's a pretty good way to spend a big holiday like that.
You know, we talked earlier about the U.S. Open. We talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, it's the first one back at Torrey Pines in 13 years. And someone asked the question last night on social media, what was the highlight of that week? And was that U.S. Open one of the most dramatic ones because of Tiger Woods winning while playing injured? And Len, you know, what came to mind with me yesterday was that I don't think anybody during that championship realized that Tiger really was hurt. And, you know, there was a couple times he might have grimaced out on the golf course, but I remember you and I sitting at White Deer Run up by our friend up there, Bob Malpete, at the golf course there, and sitting in the 19th hole enjoying lunch after playing golf a day or two after the championship was over. And that's when the news broke about Tiger's injury. And perhaps the most exciting moment about that U.S. Open came 2 days later when everybody found out the full story about what Tiger had gone through to win.
Yeah, you know, prior to that, when the match was actually on, I thought that the fun start part of the story was it was a dramatic finish to have Tiger get in the playoff. But I thought it was pretty neat that his opponent was going to be Rocco Mediate. I mean, that was really an interesting way. Rocco, I don't think, ever had a tournament that good before or since. He's a good, colorful player, a fun guy to have in a spot in a big match like that. And that was a great story in itself. And then, of course, the match was fine, but the story became much more talked about over the years because this is about Tiger playing on a broken leg. Well, it is a broken leg, technically. I mean, it's a stress fracture situation that had gotten worse and worse, but it's made for a dramatic story more since the tournament than it did on the day of that match. You're absolutely right. It probably is maybe the most dramatic of Tiger's wins. Could well be. It's argumentative, but could well be.
Speaking of White Deer Run, I was at the golf course yesterday. Hadn't been there in a long time, and conditioning looked fantastic on the few holes that I was able to see from the clubhouse. And Of course, the driving range area, very crowded yesterday, and the range looked in great shape. So if you haven't been to White Deer Run in a while, we encourage everyone to get up there. And I know that people might have seen something in the paper about the course being sold recently. And yeah, good news, the golf course isn't going anywhere. It's not a case of the course getting sold so somebody can build more houses. No, the golf course is there. It's going to stay a golf course, and the golf course looked really good. Len, I have to tell you that yesterday, everybody had an opportunity to catch up with John Deere Classic Championship Director Claire Peterson. And he brought a little bit more news to the table, including this year's sponsors exemptions.
They like to go to collegiate players for the sponsors exemptions there. And, of course, Michael Feagles of Illinois was the top of the list, as well he should be. Had a great season, great fifth-year senior player for Illinois. He's going to follow Nick Hardy and all the other players that have come out of Mike Small's program right onto the pro tours, I'm sure. David Perkins is also an Illinois State player. He was one of the other ones invited, so I think that's a nice policy that the John Deere has to encourage young players, and they go beyond the call there, giving all six of them to collegiate players this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do, because over the years, some of those players have done quite well in their and John Deere Classic would have been their pro debut, and their play as still amateurs. It's fun. They can compete right away. You'll see that.
This year, I think Claire Peterson had a bit of a different philosophy. He said some of the kids at some of the Southern College golf powers had already been getting exemptions into other tournaments that may have been held down south. So his philosophy was to focus more on kids from the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So for a while, they used to always invite the NCAA individual national champion. But I don't think that was done this year. As a matter of fact, they just pretty much stuck to kids from the Midwest. And the gentleman that you just mentioned, the David Perkins from Illinois State, holds the course record on the D.A. Wybring course there. And, of course, D.A. Wybring, the designer at TPC Deer Run. So a little bit of a tie-in, and perhaps that might have played in a little bit to that exemption. Apparently, DA made the call as well to sort of endorse David getting into the John Deere Classic. So we have a few more weeks for the tournament yet, but we'll talk more about the JDC and what they might have in terms of fans on the golf course and some of the ways that tournament is going to operate in the weeks ahead. Also, on the LPGA side of the coin, our former Illinois Open champion, Samantha Trojanovic, went to the Monday qualifier this week and got into the Meyer Classic of the LPGA up in her home state of Michigan.
You know, I always thought that Samantha would be a pretty good bet to make that the LPGA Tour, and she's played on it some. She hasn't quite blossomed into the player I thought she would be yet. I think she still will be, but she's a strong player. She was impressive at Misswood when she won the Illinois Women's Open there. I wish her the best, because Chicago has long been lacking in players on the LPGA Tour, other than Nicole Jure, who was the only representative for years and years. And of course, when Nicole stepped off of it, the only one playing there now is Winnetka's Elizabeth Zokol, who has about to make it. She's had some good tournaments. But Samantha, I think, is really an up-and-coming player. I think that her best days are yet to come.
Len's special event coming up tomorrow here in town. The annual Radix Cup that was wiped out last year due to the pandemic is back, and always a good friendly battle between the Illinois PGA Pros and the CDGA amateur team.
Yeah, you know, that's an event that is really a special event that I don't think gets near the attention for a variety of reasons that it could get. It's the best of the Illinois PGA guys against the best of the amateurs from the CDGA, and it's one big day of golf is what it is, and it's always at Oak Park. It's an event that I think that I wish we could all give it a little more attention than we do over the years, and come and watch the competition in that event, because it's a good team event, kind of a unique event that kind of stands off on its own amongst the annual schedule of local tournaments.
Well, we'll see how much fight each team has in them tomorrow, and hopefully it's not quite the fight that broke out at the Korn Ferry Tour qualifier on Monday. Wow, what'd you think of that? That's not something we usually see at the Monday four spotter.
Well, I'm opposed to slow play, but still, I wouldn't get in a fight about it. I don't think that was one of the strangest stories that I've ever heard. At a Monday qualifier, you got to expect slow play. You get all kinds of people who enter those tournaments, and these two guys were, I don't know, they were a cut different than the rest of them. Like, a fight at a golf tournament is a very, very, very rare thing. In fact, I can't remember the last one that I ever heard about, but it sure got a notoriety this week. And I don't know who the players are, but I know that they're not Korn Ferry Tour members.
No, they're not. They were just guys trying to get into the event. And I can just imagine the fact that two players were taken off the course and the third member of the threesome had to play by himself. And then in the middle of two holes later, the police officers are walking down the fairway with this guy as he's trying to qualify for the tournament. And they're taking witness statements from him about the fight. I don't know. I can't remember any kind of golf event where the players had to be interviewed by the police in the middle of a hole while they were competing in a golf tournament. Lenny, that's all we got time for this week. We'll look forward to recapping the U.S. Open with you next week and talking more about the U.S. Open this Saturday on Golfers on Golf Radio.